Does your computer repair business need a website, but you don't have any experience and not a whole lot of money? Check out Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 136. This is a show about Linux, all sorts of Linux items, news, software, hardware, anything that tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am once again here with my good friend, Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. the Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Going good. I'll say it has been kind of an insane week. Last week I did take off a day because it was my first week back, and I really need some private time to recoup. This week took forever. I literally found myself like twitching a couple times at work because I just needed to get out. But now we're streaming on Friday night. Mm-hmm. So I have a frosty beverage waiting to slowly entertain my palate while you're talking. So I think things are going pretty good. How about you?
Well, not as good as that, being that we're heading into the weekend now. First of all, I like to move to Fridays. Hopefully, we'll have more of an after-party feel going into the weekend. Obviously, Door's drinking during the show now, so you know he's having a good time. Me, this is one of the only shows I've ever been on that I haven't had a beer, so I feel like it like one of those alternate universe things, like a comet hit, a meteor or something, and then like the space-time continuum shifted, and now I'm going to be the one that knows all the stuff about Linux, and you're just going to be asking the questions going, cool, at the end of everything, and then just rolling on to the next... not cool, but very cool, very cool. So anyway, and then rolling on to the next thing.
Bizarro universe.
Yeah. Real quick, speaking of that, I was going to make a joke about Kulfer or Kupfer, but our good friend, Nightwise, in a Voxer chat recently, the piece of software in question is of the name of which is of German background, and I'm going to try to pronounce it correctly right now. It's a Kupfer. I think I did.
I don't think I can.
You can do it. I'll figure out a way you can work on it. But yeah, I just had to say that right off the bat, because, and thank you, Nightwise. It's always, first of all, if you guys don't know who he is, go check out nightwise.com. Fantastic content, great guy. But yeah, he wasn't correcting us out of us making a mistake, like, you're doing it wrong, you need to say it this way. No, he was just generally saying, hey, by the way, here's the origin, and so we got a little history lesson, and now we can correctly pronounce one of our favorite pieces of open source software.
We as in you, yes. I still need a little bit of time. Yeah, if you don't know Nightwise, I seriously don't know what you listen to, because he is on more than a couple Mac podcasts every now and then, because the man knows Mac. He's on HPR every now and then, because he really does like to tinker and hack. And his podcast, videocast, blog covers everything, Windows, Mac, and Linux. So if you don't like computers, I understand you not knowing who he is. Yeah, we had that weird side benefit from knowing a guy who literally speaks four languages, and one of them is not Esperanto. He kindly let us know it was of German descent, which I did not know. I had no idea. For all I knew, it was Latin crossed with Chinese. I have no idea. So he told us the origin of it, what the word meant, which I think was yellow.
I thought it was copper. Why am I thinking copper?
Copper, yes. Yes. And he was like, why they would call it copper? I don't understand.
Right.
Neither do I. And then the correct pronunciation. And he did just do a podcast on Mumble. I will admit I have not listened to it, because when I came back from my vacation, I was almost 100 podcasts in the hole, because I didn't listen to any when I was on vacation. And I'm doing my best to listen to each and every one to catch up, and I have not listened to that cast yet. But I can tell you this. Mumble, fantastic multi-user voice chat system.
I'll tell you right now, I've listened to that. I actually listened to it today, that one episode, for a third time. Because it was that good. And some of the stuff they talked about on that show, I didn't even know you could do with Mumble. And even Cafe Ninja, the guy he had on there.
Cafe Ninja. Good guy. Yeah. Really good guy.
Even he admitted to using Mumble for a short time and then finding all these little things you could do with it. And then now he implements them sort of in his day-to-day or uses them a lot whenever he uses Mumble. So,
dude, now I'm tempted.
So
now
good. You're like, it's so good. Yeah, I will go back and re-listen to shows, but to listen to, I mean, literally, like, I downloaded it yesterday and I've listened to it 3 times already. Yeah, it's good info.
Well, yeah, but see, I gotta wait because if I listen to it drunk, I'll forget it. But I will say this. It hasn't been implemented yet because my graphics skills suck. Horrible delete expletive. I'm trying to edit the Podnuts homepage. The top is an image where it says forums, products, contact, lounge. I'm trying to edit that to add a new entry in there, and it would probably be called voice chat or something to that effect because it's going to link to mumble.podnuts.com, which is going to automatically redirect to openspeak.cc, which will basically be the official Podnuts voice chat hub, I'll say. So I'm really now double giddy to listen to that episode.
Yeah, go listen to that episode, and if you guys haven't heard of him before, go check out nightwise.com. He is, of course, providing you with the hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say, I picture Cafe Ninja with a good 6-inch beard. He seems really smart from every time I've heard him in the past, so that's a double good cast. I'm going to temporarily bypass the basic.
First time ever. Linux to the rest of us, history.
You had a link, and as soon as I saw the link, I said, we had to put this before the basic. And I don't know if you know why I said that, but I said that.
I have an inkling, but regardless, this is one of the things that I brought to the show this week. And with all the privacy concerns lately, you know, with Prism, with all the companies that are potentially, you know, releasing data that we already knew they were compiling anyway, but a lot of people were... Regardless of if you're actually distributing content or having conversations you don't want people to hear, or if you just want to generally become a little more safe, either in your web traffic or your voice, correspondence online, either way, that's your choice to make completely. But I love this link for 2 reasons. One, it uses a Raspberry Pi. And 2, it integrates Tor into a Raspberry Pi. This thing is called the Onion Pi. It's from Adafruit Learning System. And what it is a Raspberry Pi with Tor on it and a wireless USB transmitter to where you can... Let me see the exact sentence they had here to... let's see. So anyway, you plug in an Ethernet cable into the... plug an Ethernet cable into the device itself. Anyway, it's going to help you. It's Tor on a Pi, so where you get to encrypt all of your data through this tiny machine rather than relying on either the web service or a larger machine with which to do it. And they're calling it the Onion Pi. They even have a very cool little logo, which is an onion that's like splayed open to show like the Raspberry Pi logo underneath. And I saw this, and I've been seeing so many... This is a little teaser. I've been seeing so many... Raspberry Pi more projects pop up that I feel compelled to do something about it. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But we'll have to provide a link for this in the show notes. If you're not familiar with Tor, which I wasn't up until a few months back until we heard about it at NELF, there was someone from the Tor project there delivering a talk. So to have this introduced to me a few months ago and then with sort of everything happening right now, I'm considering, because I mean, obviously I'm doing a podcast that's available to everybody. There's nothing I wouldn't say on here that I wouldn't say to someone on the street. But if you are concerned about what kind of traffic you have out there or who might be watching or listening, then this is an option for you. And not only that, but it's an option through a Raspberry Pi. So it's a cool little project, and it might be something that might fill that need in your life, which was recently brought to your attention, or you might be concerned with as of late with all everything in the news. So I thought that this is a cool little gadget.
I got a super quick question. I'm really embarrassed I don't know this. Okay, in the header image, they have the word Tor with an onion in it, plus a Raspberry Pi logo, plus a flower.
That's the Adafruit logo.
Ah, thank you. I couldn't figure that one part out.
Yeah, look at the top left-hand corner of the page.
Ah,
imagine cutting a star fruit in half and looking at it, like from the side.
So what part is the Adafruit? Is Adafruit the OS you're using?
That, I haven't read the entire article yet, so I honestly don't know.
Well, I glanced through it, and to me it was not clear at all. Raspbian is the OS they're mm-hmm. using. So I don't know, but I will say that little wireless antenna thing is genius because it looks like it actually sticks in the Ethernet adapter. Which is genius.
No, that's one of the USB ports. The Ethernet is right beneath it there.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Well, and you could see the connector through the clear case.
I was looking at it. I was looking at it upside down.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. But still, yeah, I mean, if you had, you know, if for some reason, you know, for instance, if you, I'm thinking of if you were at the library or if you were, you know, using, I don't know, a computer at work or something. I mean, obviously, be careful, you know, don't, and when you're on trial, don't tell the judge, well, I heard it on Linux, the rest of us, and they said it was okay.
No, they can. I have no problem smacking a judge down right. because judges are like mechanics who are like doctors who are like anybody else. There's competent and incompetent ones. And I'm the guy stupid enough to call incompetent ones incompetent. Okay, now, here's why I want to talk about that first, because it talks about Tor, okay? We've all heard about the Prism NSA thing, okay? Here's the gimmick. And I'm not trying to say that I know anything, but I will say I heard this theory basically years before this even happened. Somebody says that they have direct access, and the company says, no, they don't. They're actually both telling the truth. If you listen to Steve Gibson, Security Now, he basically nailed exactly what I basically heard in the past, and I believe is the most accurate description of what is going on. I'm not saying it is accurate, but I think it is the most accurate. Okay. First off, it's called Prism because a prism separates and splits out light. Okay. In the major trunks of the internet, that's where this data is being captured. They don't have to have direct access to Google servers. Someone is supplying Google internet access. That's where they tap into this and basically split the fiber and capture whatever they want to capture. If you thought to any degree that anything you do on the internet in any shape, way, or form is actually private from the entire world, you are a complete and utter fool. Period. Bar none. No exceptions. Okay. Tor, please, I beg people out there, double check me if you do not believe me. Tor was created in conjunction with the U.S. government. The Navy played a critical part in the development and implementation of Tor. If you trust Tor, you are on drugs. Most of the major exit nodes for Tor, now this might have changed in recent years, are owned by the federal government. They can see you connecting with somebody else because they have boxes in your local ISP. Everything close to a major ISP has federal government boxes in them. They have to, or else they will be closed. so they can see that you are connecting to Tor because they know your IP address. That's on every header going into the ISP. They can see you going to Tor because they can see the destination IP in that packet. Then they own the exit nodes. They can see where your traffic is going. And that's not really the whole kicker of it. There are so many different ways to track and identify people digitally, it is nearly insane. Via JavaScript, they can look at everything from how many fonts you have installed, what is your screen resolution, what is the exact version of your flash, what is all these different things that can easily narrow it down to who you exactly are. If you honestly want to not be trackable on the internet, A, you cannot use your own internet connection. Period. You have to either jack it from a neighbor, go down to a library where there's not a camera watching you, or something to that effect. They know a lot. And I don't say that to cause fear into people, because the odds of them actually looking at what you're doing is slim to none. You literally have to do something to make them warrant looking at you. Granted, it's all being captured, it's all being stored for later, but there's really honestly no need to fear unless you are actually doing something wrong. And don't take what I just said wrong. What I don't fear is privacy. I personally think privacy has been dead for 30 years. What I fear is freedom. I would like to believe I can use my bank debit card, go and buy beer and bacon, and not have health insurance rates go up for me, and not have job opportunities taken away from me because of my purchasing habits or my internet habits. You know, you go to too many quote-unquote websites of this nature, we don't think you should work here. I worry about freedom. Privacy, some people worry about a lot, some people don't. I'll just say, if you believe what you do on the internet is private, then you should have not listened to this episode. And I am sorry if I crushed something you believed. But you basically can't trust any of these services out there. You can't trust Gmail. You can't trust Dropbox. You can't trust Carbonite. You can't trust MSN. You can't trust Hotmail. You basically cannot trust anything that is hosted inside of the United States. I'm sorry. But doesn't happen. You can encrypt anything you want. They still see the packets leaving your IP and arriving at another IP. So they know something's going on. You know?
You make a good point.
And I'm really not trying to be a downer on anybody because, look, I know I'm weird. I say my phone number on podcast. I say anything about myself. I don't hide anything back. With that said, I'm not going to take a picture of my own crotch and put it on the internet for everyone to see. I do expect some amount of privacy with what I do, but I elect, I option into being very open, as open as I really honestly can be, and I understand people not doing that. But, yeah. There's really no 100% way to ever be anonymous or private. You just have to try to minimalize what you do release out there if you are concerned about that. And if you are concerned about that, get a Windows box, download Maltego, M-A-L-T-E-G-O, I want to say it's called. It's at Pat Riva. I can't even pronounce it right. Website. Install that on a Windows box, take a look at it, and you will see this is the super easy stuff for people to see, and it really takes no effort for them to find this information out. So don't be low-hanging fruit if you care about your privacy, I'll say.
Okay. I'll have to check that out too.
Yeah. It's some people I've shown that software to literally cuss me out and say you should not have shown me that. I will say that.
Okay. So follow the link at your own risk.
Yes. The next link, I really wanted to get off that topic. If you want to know about that topic, go listen to the billions of websites and the billions of podcasts and the billions of blogs that are covering it into way too much detail. Some of them are stating facts. Some of them are mixing facts with opinions. And some of them are just clearly making stuff up. You be your own judge, because that's what I try to do. Okay, this link I thought was apropos to talk about. Can you completely secure Linux? Is the name of the article over at esecurityplanet.com? The gist of it is absolutely not. Of course you can't. Nothing is 100% secure. Nothing will ever be 100% secure. The only way to be secure on a computer is to not boot it up. But I will say, in the Linux universe, you can really increase your security by a factor of 10. Linux, by its very nature, is more secure. But if you can increase that factor by 10 if you use software created by the NSA. Okay? Here's the thing. With this type of software, the NSA had a lot to reap from creating this software, and they created it in such a way that they basically had to give it back. I believe they had to. I don't think it was really an option. I think they had to give it back. And what they gave back is a complete code set that has been utterly reviewed by experts on the topic, and they've all determined this is fantastic software to help you lock down and administrate control on the file level of what applications and what users can do what. This is the kind of thing that can take security and enable very powerful things for the end user to do, but at the same token, restrict a lot of other things that could be damaging on your computer. I will say, onto itself, it is just a tool. It's how you implement it which can make your system utterly secure. And if you want to be in the security business, if you want to be a consultant as regards to creating security for public-facing computers or for corporate enterprises, it's really hard to get better than SE Linux. Needless to say, every NSA computer running anything of any importance is running SE Linux. Because they want to make sure Bob can do his job, but Bob cannot copy stuff off of this computer, you know, forward stuff from the computer, get in and hack the computer while he's working on it. The NSA doesn't trust themselves as much as they don't trust anybody else, which is part of the reason I think they made this software.
That's very interesting. I've never, I've always heard of SE Linux over the years, but I've never really investigated it before, so I had no idea.
I'll say for normal people on normal desktops, it is a hindrance, typically, to normal computing. You know how typing in your password, it's basically an inconvenience.
To some people, yes.
Well, I mean, even when you go to do an update, ask for a password.
Right. It
doesn't just do it.
Yeah. Oh, it...
You know, because it's more secure.
Oh, okay.
Same kind of thing. If you go and have SE Linux on a computer and then you download a file and you go to execute that file, you're going to have to jump through extra hoops to get it done. Yeah. Where on Linux right now, you just download it, right-click it, mark it as executable, and you can run it.
Right.
You know, it's little things like that that SE Linux does that makes the overall system... I don't even know the right word to use, but near untouchable.
Well, it puts some more hurdles in front of the user, because, you know, just as well as I do, some people will, you know, we've all done this too, you know, you get the big agreement, you know, when you first install a piece of software, you're like, yeah, I agree, whatever, get out of my, I don't care, whatever. You didn't read those, you know, 52 pages of text. You just like, click, whatever, just get this out of my way. I need to get to my thing. I need to do this. And if some people are not in the know, and if they're downloading, something we spoke about a couple episodes again, Martin and I I can't remember the project, but installing or having items hidden within images, you know, which is a lot of how a lot of infections start, either through, you know, links and emails or, hey, download this, you know, crazy animated GIF of this cat, you know, hitting the pie tin with a baseball bat or whatever, you know, you know, and then, you know, they download the image. It's like, oh, this is such a cute little kitty, but inside the image was something, you know, executable, or the executable was labeled a JPEG or whatever. So, I could see how in certain environments that would be a crucial thing to have. And also, if you're one of the things I mentioned in the article was one of the guys talking was, I could trade the stupid out of people, but people are still going to make some mistakes. And yeah, if you have one person that's constantly, I mean, even going through those extra steps, those extra hoops, and still making mistakes, then maybe they're just not the best person to be interfacing with that type of machine.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely agree. If there is a way to break stuff, end users will always find a way, and the weakest part of any operating system is the person sitting. You know, kind of the same basic topic, I want to say. When you're dealing with, let's say, more secure systems, especially like enterprise systems, there's a couple similarities between them. One, there's typically not a desktop environment installed. So there's no browser even. There's no Flash. There's no Office suite of any kind. Typically speaking, I'm going to say this very carefully. Typically speaking, on every operating system, in my personal opinion, the last couple of years, the weakest spot has not been the operating system itself. It's been adjunct, third-party, extra software put on top of it, like Flash, or browsers, or video drivers, or even in Windows, sometimes it's like the FTP server you can have on a Windows server. It's not the kernel itself. It's not the core of the operating system. So with enterprise servers, typically all that kind of stuff is not even available to put on, or it's just not put on. Which means if you want to manage that or configure that or do any work on that at all, you have to use text-based interfaces, i.e. command line type stuff. Sometimes you can load up a web client from another computer, point it at that server, and you get some kind of GUI, but for a large amount of stuff, you're going to have to run what they call in this article over at openlogic.com, TUIs. TUIs is text user interface. Now, that said, just because it's text does not mean it cannot be dynamic or interactive. You can have stuff called ncurses shells, which is like old DOS computing where you can literally tab through things, hit the space bar, get a list, and it's almost like Windows, only 8-bit looking with big, huge blocks.
I've seen something like that before.
Mm-hmm. If you just go into your Linux terminal and type alsamixer, A-L-S-A-M-I-X-E-R, all one word, hit enter, you'll see an example of an ncurses type interface where you can hit the up arrow and the down arrow and you see the little slide going up and down. But one thing they did in here that I really liked was they showed you the basics of creating your own text user interface. I cannot really encourage people enough to go look at this. It's not complex what they're doing. They're basically deleting temp files in a folder, but they're giving you a GUI, a quote-unquote GUI for, but it's really a text user interface. The same basic concept and idea can be reused, rehashed, repurposed to do basically anything you can think of on the command line, but you can give it a basic interface. So hypothetically, I'm the guy in my unit who knows this command perfectly. All the rest don't really. I could make a script for that and tell all the other techs, just run this script. And they just have to go down, hit enter, and you know they can see, get good descriptions, see progress of what's going on, and it just makes it much less likely for errors to happen, in my opinion.
Well, and it's also got to be a lot less system intensive than an alternative GUI version of the same application, because it's funny to see, you know, you've run diagnostic tools on PCs before, and if you look at, like, for instance, if you run like an AV suite, certain AV suites, you look at how much CPU percentage that's taken up, and sometimes you're like, well, that's the problem. Let's get rid of that. You know what I mean? So and being more versatile on the command line, it's only going to help you. It's much less system intensive. It will be faster. Russ Winter speaks a lot to his recent experience, but his new job. A lot of it is a lot of learning. It's a lot of information to soak in. But at the end of the day, especially when he's talking about interfacing in VI, it comes down to muscle memory. So after a certain point, it's just like you're not thinking about it. You're thinking about the end result, and your fingers are doing it, and it's just there. It's done. So it's only going to benefit you to learn not only to the keyboard to be a fast typist, but any CLI interface, you get the more experience with it, no matter what the end result you're trying to do, it's just going to make you that much better.
Absolutely. Can't agree more. And I will say, if you, like, here's what I used to do on Windows boxes. Whenever a customer gave me a box, the first thing I did was hit Control, Shift, Escape all at the same time. That would bring up Task Manager. And I would look at all running processes, but I didn't look at the processes. I just looked at the very bottom that gave me the total number of processes. And I knew on Windows XP when it first came out, if it was anything above 50, with nothing else running, if it was more than 50, something was going on with that box that was slowing it down. Same thing with Linux. Basically, without the GUI, you're basically not loading a lot of different things. In the same universe, let's say, the basic Linux desktop, if you just load up a blank desktop and look at the number of system of the number of things running, it's going to be a lot more than 50, because Linux is compartmentalized.
Yep.
Where, like, with Windows, basically the GUI is just one thing. Not with Linux. You have X, you have the DE, you have the window manager, you have all these different things running. So what would look like one thing in Windows could look like 10 things in Linux. It's just separated out. So raw numbers might be misleading in Linux, but without a GUI, it might as well. You could probably run on a P2 with like 32 megs of RAM just fine, unless, of course, you run a lot of services like FTP, web, SFTP, SS, you know, all these different crazy things. Okay, and to go from not running a GUI to looking at all the GUIs kind of thing, if you take a look at thecodingstudio.com, there's a link, there's a page on there that has basically screenshots from Linux from 6/13/2013, which is yesterday. And if you keep going to the right, and if you keep scrolling down, you will see these links go back to March 31st, 2003. There's at least, I'd say, 600, 500, something like that, screenshots.
Oh, wow.
And it's of all different distributions and all different desktops. What I highly encourage, like, someone to do, if right now, if you're using Mint, start in the top left and keep finding Mint, go down, find the next Mint, go down, find the next Mint, go down to at the bottom, then go to the middle column, find the Mint, and then you do that, and then you can basically see the history of Mint, how it has evolved, how it has changed, how it has grown in its general appearance. If you look back, they basically have Ubuntu Linux, it was called 4.10 preview. And if you go through the pictures, you can see there's the boot screen, there's the complete installation process, which is the Debian installation process. Then you see the login screen, you see the login splash screen, you see the actual desktop, and they go through a whole bunch of desktop screenshots. There's literally like 60 images here.
Yeah. This is cool. Just for giggles, I searched for the earliest version of Mandrake that I could find, because that was the very first live CD I ran back in 2001.
Gotcha.
And this one's from 2004. It's Mandrake 10.1. And yeah, just looking at the images, man, it just takes me back. It's crazy. So this would be a good kind of nostalgic tool to go and like, hey, how like if you, in your case with Ubuntu, you know, where did it start? What did the interface look like now? Well, obviously it looks something more like GNOME instead of Unity, but whatever, that's a whole different topic. But also I could see this being beneficial because you got to figure, you don't know what the GUI looks like unless you're investigating photos like this or unless you're running it in a live environment. Even if you look at the current ones, you know, the ones for distributions that are up and running and alive right now, this could be a good reference to if you're looking for just a different, you know, user interface.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is cool. But, yeah, it takes me back. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, I believe the first Ubuntu I used might have been 6.06, but for some reason it looks like the first one they have is 6.10. And I will say, to me, the best thing about this was I reminded myself how absurdly far Linux has came. Some people out there keep saying, the year of the Linux desktop, the year of the Linux desktop, Well, if you look at how quickly this desktop has advanced, I don't know why it hasn't been at least the year of being competitive on the desktop for good percentages of populations, why that hasn't came true. Because the desktop to me looks competitive.
No, that's very true. And it's very funny. I'll bring this next week, but I'll give it a little tidbit of it right now. But Bill Wilson, our good friend Red Dwarf, posted something today. Or at least sent something to me. I probably sent it to you too. But John Mad Dog Hall was being interviewed about the Linux desktop, and one of the things that he was even quoted as saying, because he was asked about what he thinks about Steam on Linux, and he says he feels one of the reasons the Linux desktop didn't take off is because of its very narrow selection of games early on. And it's only recently sort of blossomed and blown up. So even, you know, Mad Dog is acknowledging that. I mean, obviously, you know, you look at that as one of the problems, you know, because if you're trying to get diehard PC, you know, gamers to convert, you'd be like, well, can I play my WoW? Can I play this? Can I play that? And, you know, 3-4 years ago, the answer was more likely no. Just because, right. You know, Wine wasn't as advanced. It wasn't interfacing with very well with high demanding, you know, GPU games. But that aside, I wanted to at least mention that because it was something I read today.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. Even if you're not a gamer, you have to acknowledge the need, the desire of people to want to run games. Because hypothetically, even if I don't care about games, the need to run games is still probably prevalent because what if my son wants to use my computer? Mm-hmm. If it doesn't run games, he's going to be very unhappy. You know?
Think of it like if there was one major car manufacturer, right, that everybody used, and there was this other car manufacturer where the prices were great. If you had to do financing, it was much better, but you couldn't drive that car on the freeway. That car could never go on the freeway. You could take the back roads.
Right.
It has four wheels, a steering wheel, it takes the same fuel to everything else, but you can never take it on a freeway. That's a huge restriction.
Yeah. Even though it can off-road and it can go, you know, 800 miles on a gallon of gas.
Better gas mileage, doesn't matter. Much cheaper, better for the environment, all whole bit, but you can never take it on a freeway.
Yeah, I'm not doing it because then, you know, I have to drive to Florida. It's going to take me, what? Not 17 hours, it's going to take me 85 hours, I'll pass. Yeah. Very cool. Okay, the next link is actually in homage, I'll say, because that's the best word I could think of. The Techie Geek. The Techie Geek has maybe, right before my eyes, dare I say, first off, I'll say, I am personally very upset for all the listeners of the Techie Geek that has not gotten to hear Russ talk because he's been so busy with life in general. That's what one thing I got to make sure everybody understands is he's more upset than you guys that he's not been able to do Techie Geek first and foremost. And I ask you to please believe that he is very upset that he has not been able to, but we have to remember podcasting. It's fun. He's doing a lot right now in life, and one of the things he is doing is he is learning maybe more than anyone in Lennox I've ever seen at the time frame that he's been doing this.
Yeah.
He's the guy who first showed me the fish shell, F-I-S-H shell. And part of the reason he showed it to me was it looked so good and it was so easy to understand a lot of the output from a lot of the applications. Okay, you have the bash shell. That's your typical shell when you go to your terminal. It's the bash shell. This is basically the fish shell. It is bash plus a little bit more. One of the things it does a lot better than the default way bash runs is it shows you colors. It shows you a lot of colors. If you just go to Google and type fish shell and go to images, okay, maybe we should put the word Linux in there as well. You will see a lot of terminals being shown, and most of them have decent color being displayed in them, where if you just display files or show folders or you type sudo apt-get install, you know, everything comes out as a different color. This is a very good way for new users to comprehend what they're typing. And one of the big things why I liked it, if something you typed stayed the normal color of the text being gray, then there was probably a chance you actually typed it wrong because it should change color. So I thought that was really cool. It was like a quick indicator before even hitting enter that something was wrong.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I just thought that was cool.
That is interesting.
Yeah. And I will say, all you got to do in, let's say, Ubuntu or Debian or Mint, sudo apt-get install, and I believe it's just fish, F-I-S-H. And then when you load up your terminal, just type again fish, F-I-S-H, and hit enter.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then voila, you have yourself a much easier to read for the new user interface to the terminal. I think it's the kind of thing that can help help that initial hump of the complexity of the terminal. And I really do mean that exactly how I said it. Much easier to overcome what is complicated because there's less to think about. The colors tell you a lot.
It's simplified to a certain extent to that it might scare people because it seems so complicated. Because really, think about it. All you've used is a GUI your whole life, and you're not put in front of a terminal with a blinking cursor and little else. That could be scary if you don't know what to do.
Yeah, and I will say this. I believe the file is .fish in your home folder. If you suffer from a type of color blindness,
which I do,
I'm 99.9% sure it is fairly straightforward to go into that file and pick color templates. So a certain color, if you cannot see, will not be displayed. You can do those kind of tweaks in the fish shell. They're not super easy, but they're not hard at all. All you gotta do is fish, the shell, colors, and I'm sure there'll be a full description of how to do it, maybe four down in your search result.
Mm. Okay, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I definitely like it, and not gonna lie, I used it after Russ talked about it for about a year. Just because it was easy. And I encourage people, don't change your default terminal. Just keep launching terminal and then typing fish for a long time before you even look at making it your default shell. Just keep bash the way it is and then worry about making it your default later. It's no big deal.
This reminds me of at a previous job of mine, we had to interface with a Unix machine for ordering and had an animated locomotive, animated train during a loading screen. It was all, you know, text. But right. It was just the dumbest thing. But every time I looked at it, I giggled. Well, I was like, the things you can accomplish.
I'm trying to remember. I want to say... no. I'm trying to remember what you type. You can type in most Linux terminals right from being installed. You don't have to install anything. I thought it was Choo Choo, but I guess not. I mean, where a little animated train would go across the screen.
I want to say Martin told me about something like that. Martin Rambo Obando, for those of you keeping score here, brought me something like that. I don't know if it was in Voxer or Google Plus, or if he brought it in one of the episodes he was on, but... Oh, no, I saw an article. It was like the top 10 cool things you do in the terminal. There was one, there was like a monkey. Like, like you'd see the fingers coming up from the bottom, and he'd pull his head up or whatever.
Right. SL, it looks like. Let me try it. SL, enter. No. It says it's not installed, so it can't be that.
Mm. Okay.
I don't know. Well, I remember, I think a buddy showed it, told me it on Google Plus, I think it was. And I went to my son when he was at his Ubuntu workstation, because that's what he uses. And I told him, okay, click this, now type these letters and hit enter. And he typed it, hit enter, and he just started giggling like a little girl. And then when it went across the screen, he said, how do I get it to do it again? I said, you press up to go to the previous command, and then you hit enter. He just sat there for a good half hour just giggling, and then he called over his little brother, Danny, you gotta look at this. And then Danny, literally being Danny, just said, what? That's crazy. And they both just sat there for like another 20 minutes doing it.
Jeez.
I know. They're my kids. I'm sorry. They're so easily entertained.
Well, you know, I mean, at least they have that instead of just jingling keys, you know.
I'm sorry. I was looking at something
shiny. I saw a scroll run by your webcam there.
Exactly. Okay, this next thing I had to show Steve C, because I know nobody else that I should show this to is the only way I can put it. Okay, it's called Traction. It's T-R-A-C-K-T-I-O-N. Okay, if you go to traction.com, the first thing you'll see on the big rotating image thing, gallery, I don't know what it's called, thing, is a penguin head. Click the penguin head. You'll be redirected to traction.com/Linux. This is a completely free Linux digital audio workstation that's brand new kind of thing. I don't know actually how old it is, but to Linux, it's pretty, pretty new. I immediately had to tell Steve C, who downloaded it for Windows, who I'll say was not a fan of it. I reminded him, I said, well, here's a question, Steve. You have preconceived notions of what a DAW is supposed to be. Could that be making you expect stuff that, you know, maybe you shouldn't? You know, maybe not being like every other DAW is a good thing? And he said, okay. Maybe I am expecting things just because of my experience on other digital audio workstations. He said, but it's just weird. He said, I tried to do something I considered to be simple, and 15 minutes later, I just uninstalled the application.
Mm.
So if you are already accustomed to other digital audio workstations, this might not be the one for you. But if you are completely new to it and you don't, and you just want to hop into it and learn, this might be a good jumping off point, is all I'll say. It might be. I have no idea.
Well, that's a good disclaimer. Along to what he was saying about that. Now, keep in mind, I read this article earlier today. I checked out the website. I have yet to install or play with it. But if you think of one of the more complicated things you can do as far as like a creative endeavor on a machine, you're talking about, you know, video mm-hmm. or audio editing. Because it really is like art once you get used to it, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it behooves, you know, businesses to take these complicated tools, you know, shrink them down and make them more compact and easy to use for the mainstream, because they can package and sell it. Not that that's what these people have in mind for that. But my experience with high-end video editors and then low and mid-range, you know, user-friendly video editors is exactly what he is talking about. If you came up using professional or semi-professional tools in whatever environment it was, you know, you self-taught a class, work environment, whatever, you know, it's essentially A, B, C, and D, kind of something I spoke about last week with, you know, once you learn the tools, you know, you don't need the tool belt. You know, once you learn the certain skills when it comes to video or audio editing, it doesn't matter what interface you go to, as long as it's kind of an industry standard. But if you go to, if you go from using multiple of those to something simplified for the general public like this, you do have those preconceived notions of how things should be. Not necessarily, I need this option in this drop-down menu, or this track needs to be this color or at this portion, but there can be simple things, and I've done it before. Like, how do I do a crossfade, for instance, for video, and it's just buried somewhere? Or it's so easy and right in front of my face that I didn't see it because I expected it to be buried somewhere. Right. So if you're either way, if you're familiar with using a digital audio workstation or not, and you're looking to try one, give this one a try. Send us an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com and let us know what you thought of Traction, because we would be interested to hear it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's the one thing I don't want to discourage people from. No matter your experience level, I encourage you to play with it just for a different experience. And I would love to hear how people. The more people, the better, who have any experience with doing this kind of thing and comparing it. A, B, you know, I liked it because of this. I didn't like it because of that. It has to grow here. It nailed it there. Those are the kind of things that I think make a difference to people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's the little things that really determine and the results.
It is. It really is.
Okay. I will swear, Cody. Oh no, we got one more. First of all, okay. Okay.
Sorry. Sounded like you were ramping up there for a minute.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay. One from one quote unquote creative thing to another. Okay. At the Google I/O a month ago, they selected what they said would be the de facto standard Android development kit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's called IDEA from IntelliJ or IntelliJ. Made by IDEA. I don't know. It's one or the other. I don't even know, to be honest, because that's how much I know about Android development. But what I do know is I found a really good link of how to get this official toolkit installed on Ubuntu 12.04 LTS, I believe. Yeah, as long as it's 11.10, as long as it's greater than 11.10. That's what I'm trying to say, yeah. And this gives you literally step-by-step and links on exactly how to install it and configure it with, dare I say, glorious screenshots. Because not only is it a screenshot, but they actually say, here's a number one where they're talking about number one. Here's number two where they're talking about number two in their explanation. So that made it very, very easy to understand, in my opinion.
Let me ask you a question really quick, because this is bothering me. In that picture, is that like a special? I mean, obviously this is within the tool, but what the hell is up with those tears?
Those tears are just fake tears, because the screen will scroll well past that.
Okay. I just
because it says one is when you're adding it. Two comes immediately after that, enter your password. Three, did get an update. Now, three scrolls the screen a couple times on most people, so there's a tear between three and four. So that's all it
is. Okay. I can recognize it now as, like, maybe that's where they, in their picture editor program or whatever, they, like, you know, use a hand tool to cut that, but that looked, oh, man, yeah.
It does. It would have been much better to have a hard straight line across the screen with like a heartbeat thing in the middle,
or
of it,
just something. Separate screenshots.
Yeah, because each tear is unique, which just makes it more confusing.
Right. Yeah, and I was just like, that's all I can. That's all I see when I look at this. I'm just like, you know, like if you saw, I don't know, a picture yes. of a family photo, but in the background there was a clown on fire. You know, like, well, what's up with that clown?
Right. I was going to use the example of my buddy riding a motorcycle down a street, makes a turn, a big, long, sweeping turn, which turned out to be a decreasing radius turn, which means it slowly gets sharper as the turn goes on. And as he started the turn, he looked ahead and he saw a patch of, like, gravel, sand, with a little bit of leaves. And he stared at it. And that's your critical mistake. When you stare at it, you are guaranteed on a motorcycle to hit it. So with this, you're seeing the tears, and nothing else makes any difference. The tear yep. just is right there. Mm-hmm. And that is what, you, yeah. Because the first time I looked at it, I literally thought there was some kind of error in my graphics. I thought, is my video card going up? Yeah, made no sense to me. Right. Okay, now this next one, Cody, I swear, I am very sorry. The last thing I want to do is appear like I'm smacking anyone down. This is the last time this episode I'm going to follow up your article with something that you might not expect.
Look, before you go on there, I'm going to cut you off. I get that you're trying to get me so frustrated to where I quit the show. I get that.
No.
But me at least addressing it on the
just
show is going to... I know, hey, it's fine. You know, this is the doppelganger universe. I know more than you do about Linux, and that's understandable. So, that being said, you're on Verizon, and I have access to all your calling logs.
Yes, you do.
I'm sorry. But anyway...
It's called... No. It's called the Share Everything plan.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny because... I'm not even... That's a whole other site. Anyway, yes. So, I was about to bring up an article, and you're about to somehow let the wind out of the sails. So go ahead and... I imagine you right now, you're at the mast of my ship with a knife in your teeth, and you jump... And you hit the sail with the knife, and you, as your body weight is pulling you down, you're cutting the sail with the knife. Go ahead.
Dude, that's a lot of body weight.
That is. Well, it's a big tear.
Yeah, it is.
So go ahead. Jump.
Well, no. I mean, first off, there is a new System 76 laptop that you put in the chat, and I will say it looks impressive to me. I like it because it's not gigantic. It's a 14-inch laptop. Which to me is bordering on too big.
Mm-hmm.
I will say it seems like too much laptop for me. I don't have that kind of demands. Because it seems to me, I put Crouton on my Chromebook.
Right.
I basically find I never use it. I save all my computing for a quiet, isolated ground floor isolation chamber / studio / man cave area. It's like I have a hard time mentally doing stuff on my laptop. And I know that's just me. Many other people, that's their primary box.
Right. Basically, I just wanted to bring up the fact that System 76 did launch some new laptops, adding to their line, adding more options, which, as you always know, options are good. They have an Ultrabook-esque option now. I forget the exact name of it. Let me bring it up here. But anyway, it's a thinner form factor model. And then they have... let me bring this up here. Yeah, there we go.
One more?
It's actually the Galago.
Ah.
The Lemur Ultra is the one I have. I love that one. Excuse me. It's not more of an Ultra Book, but it's an Ultra Pro. Yeah, it's more of like a more sturdy built... think like HP Elite Book or like a Lenovo type machine. And then they have the Bonobo Extreme still down at the end, which is their just 17.3-inch lunch tray. But I'm not going to go off about that.
Well, and the power to be called Extreme.
Yes. No. It's a beast. I'll say that it's a beast.
Yes. Let me tell you something. If I had that laptop, I could track the NSA.
There you go.
You know.
Well, this one's neat. The standard price point, you know, stock, $995, which isn't bad, mm-hmm. Considering what you get. And what I really like to see, because if I didn't have a laptop today, and if I was going to go out and I wanted like a mid-range, you know, $800 to $1,200 machine. Obviously, you're making that a kind of investment. Some of you, you know, heading into summertime, running into holiday or birthday money, gifts, wedding, whatever. Anyway, if you're in the market for a laptop, at least check this out. But one of the thing, a few of the things I would consider that I would need on a laptop right now, knowing that, hey, I'm going to buy this, I want it to last, you know, 3 to 5 years, it's got to have USB 3. Especially if it's going to be a desktop replacement. This has 3 USB 3 ports.
Wow.
Not just one. Not one on either side and one in the back, but 3 of the suckers, right?
Yeah.
And it is a thinner laptop. Even the Lemur Ultra I have, I think, is even a little bit thicker than this. The one thing I don't like about this machine is the placement of the hinge on the machine and the hinge itself.
It looked weird.
Yeah. That's got to be fragile. Look. You see that?
Yeah, it's one single hinge in the middle. Yeah. I understand. Okay, now with the two on the far ends, it's very easy for your screen to, like, tweak.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I don't know if this is better, though. I don't act like I'm a physics, engineering, design, whatever expert. But I would definitely assume that's not better because no one else is doing it that I know of.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That and it doesn't. The hinge isn't on the full rear of the machine. It's about, I don't know, half inch in from the very back, much like the newer, like the Dells. I don't know. That's just me being picky. But overall, this is a great addition to their line. It's a little bit more of a beefier machine than their low end, the Lemur Ultra. And yeah, 14 inches as far as a laptop screen is the largest I'll go now, because 15.6, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is an i7.
Yep.
This is not a low-end in any shape or form device. I mean, I could probably walk into a Best Buy and out of 20 laptops, let's say they have 20, 16 of them will be weaker than this laptop. Yep. At least, because this is an i-frigging-7. This is a beast unto itself. Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the first laptops in the market to have the Intel Iris Pro Graphics 5200.
Mm.
Yeah.
I like Intel graphics.
Yep. Yeah.
And, okay, I'll just say what I'm about to quote is from a competitor of System 76. And I'll just say, if anyone ever believes one company outright, then they are a fool. Something tells me the truth is somewhere in the middle of what System 76 states and what this company says. This company is ThinkGeek. Okay, ThinkGeek was at Northeast GNU Linux Fest. Mm-hmm. They had a couple laptops there. They seemed good. I don't know. They seemed good. I touched it. Oh, it feels like a laptop. You know. I will say the biggest difference fundamentally between ThinkGeek and System 76. System 76 goes out of their way to try to support as much compatibility as possible with Ubuntu. There's that repo, I think, if you enable on your Ubuntu install on a System 76 laptop, that will download and install all drivers for your specific hardware. It's like, if you have an IBM ThinkPad, you reload blanket Windows. It's like going to the IBM website and getting all of the drivers for that hardware. Mm-hmm. Same exact principle. It's just with Linux. I love the fact that a vendor offers that. Now, with that said, over on the Triskel forums, which Triskel is Ubuntu with all proprietary closed source blobs taken out of the kernel level even, distribution. So it's an utterly capital F in free distribution. Over on the Triskel forums, the CEO of ThinkPenguin himself made a comment about System 76, and I believe it's about this new laptop. Now, let me rephrase that. It's not about this new laptop. A announcement of this new laptop, I think, spurred this conversation. Okay. Okay, I'm trying to find the exact word this guy uses, because it seemed okay, ready. There are a lot of issues with this system and the comparison besides the ones you have mentioned. It's not the same class for starters. The system ships with digital handcuffs, has privacy invasion enabling technology, has Wi-Fi card that's not compatible with Triskel or any capital F he should have put free software operating system. I'm going to stop right there. I'm not saying what he's saying is right. I'm not saying what he's saying is wrong. What I'm saying is the privacy invasion is the Amazon lens. I don't even have to look any farther, and nor have I looked any farther than this. That's what he's referring to, because that's what Richard Stallman, the FSS, does call the Amazon lens, privacy invasion. And I'm not going to say it is. I'm not going to say it isn't. It is whatever you think it is. I personally don't like it, but that's what he's calling it there. The Wi-Fi card not being compatible with any Triskel or any free operating system means that they're using a Wi-Fi card that's drivers are not bundled into the kernel as source code. That doesn't mean you won't be able to get the card working if you install flat Debian and you do not install any proprietary drive. No, I'm sorry, Debian. Okay. So basically, if you load Triskel or you load, there's like three or four more that I can't remember now. Basically, you will never get this Wi-Fi card working, ever, period. But not going to get it working. If you load up Ubuntu, Mint, I believe Debian, Arch, Gentoo, I mean, SUSE, Fedora, even, you can get the Wi-Fi card working. Sometimes it will work right off the boot. Some of it you will have to go a little bit of digging or enabling or installation to get the Wi-Fi card working. So I understand what ThinkGeek is trying to say. The hardware platform is not totally 100% compatible with free. And I understand that being important to some people. That's not important to all people. Mm-hmm. That's just something I wanted to make sure people were aware of.
Yes. Because ultimately, when it comes to buying anything, you know, you need to vote with your dollars. But you either have to have a belief system in place or at least have an idea of what you do and do not want to support. So having that perspective is just going to help you make a better decision. There's no harm in it.
Yes. And I will thank Will Hill, W-I-L-L. H-I-L-L, Will Hill on Google Plus for posting this. I don't want to say I knew this all along. I'll say I should have known it all along, but I never realized that it isn't the case because if you don't go enable those repos, some stuff will not work right. Like your sleep might not work right. Your Wi-Fi card might not work completely right on a System 76 with a retail quote-unquote version of Ubuntu installed on it until you do that. I had no idea. So that's new to me. I thank him for pointing it out, and I just want to make people aware of it. I'm not saying, oh, you shouldn't get right. System 76 because of that. No. Right. I'm not, because to be honest, if I had the money and I could afford one of them powerhouse things, I think I probably would.
If you had the money, you'd be drinking beer on the podcast and eating ribs for dinner.
Yes, exactly. We all know that doesn't happen.
Never.
Ever.
Real quick, too, Rambo from the chat wanted to, or did point out, I think you meant to say Think Penguin.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, Think now, Geek. Oy vey, I said Think Geek.
Think Geek, you still, if you ever need a caffeinated soap or a Minecraft block foam sword, go there.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Or anything caffeine memorably related, go to ThinkGeek. They're awesome.
Yes. Caffeine related, Star Wars related, yes. Doctor Who related. That's your place.
Bantha, sleeping bag.
Yeah, thank you very much again, Martin, because, you know, without you.
It is honest.
I wouldn't have remembered next week to correct myself. I know that. Okay, now the next couple links are actually all related. The first one I want to talk about super quick. You and Martin talked about, and I will say, I didn't listen to you and Martin's episode till after we recorded last week's episode. Mm. Martin was worried about what kind of job he did. You guys did a damn good job, number one. Number two, as soon as Martin started talking about that Lego X-Wing fighter, I literally was like pushing people out of the way to get to my computer really quick to type it up and look it up. Because I didn't want to see it on a mobile screen. I wanted to see that on a big screen. So that was so utterly cool.
I gotta stop you right there for just a second. Dor sent me a Voxer message, I don't know, 3 or 4 days ago. Something to the effect of, man, that's a good looking X-Wing. And I didn't remember what it was. I didn't know was it in reference to, so I literally thought that he just messaged me something else. But the same thing happened last time Martin was on the show. He sent me a Voxer message referencing something he mentioned on the show, and I literally just thought it was like the equivalent of like a drunk dial, but on Voxer, where you just you text the wrong person the wrong message or something. I just thought, what the hell? What is he talking about? And I thought, oh yeah, that thing. Yep. So right. Yes.
Yeah, it's exactly like pulling out your phone and hearing bip bip bip. Man, Susie said those ribs were sweet.
Right.
Who's Susie? What ribs?
Right.
You know, yeah. But yeah, I will say, you guys mentioned this, and I honestly, I'm not going to lie, I didn't pick up on it. But obviously, you guys did a good job, because I picked the same thing. Okay. Devin IT, never heard of him before, are planning on launching a tiny device, which looks kind of like an MK-802 or one of those little Android stick computers. But it's very unclear, at least to me, what this is running on it as its base operating system. I'm going to have to guess it's Linux. Oh, it does say Linux-based OS. Because here was the only thing that I think scared me about this. I believe this was the one that's actually going to use the... No, it doesn't. Good. Okay, this was the one I liked better then. Because the other one is using Wise Technology. I want to say it's the name of the company, Wise Tech. I will say I personally reviewed a dozen thin clients. Wise, in my experience, humble experience, their prices were great. Their performance was not. Video streaming to a terminal client via Wise was horrid in some cases. Normal office work, Excel, Outlook, it was fantastic. But once you tried to do anything with any kind of frame rate, it was very noticeable. It was very, very, very noticeable. So I like the fact that they're not using that. They're using something else. I like competition. $99, that's how you get competition. You know, mm-hmm. It's hard for a company to ignore something that's $99.
Oh, yeah.
So that's really cool. I want to see this thing actually take off, and it does look like they say this looks nearly identical to a GX-802 quad-core mini computer that runs Android and Linux. So it is basically the same, I'm going to guess, hardware prettied up with a case on it, with a branded case on it, and customized OS to run this task. I do think these kind of things are going to take off. In business, at least, just because of their cheap prices.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll kind of, I don't know if you have listened to it yet, but I read the article. I thought that was very neat, kind of along what the lines of what you were saying, was that, you know, this can be accomplished with software or like with a larger network solution, but to have it be a simple solution, not only for the enterprise itself or the company, but for the end user. It's coming at that to solving the problem from another angle. So, and it is cheap, it's cost effective enough. And another thing that I thought of after the fact, but I'm reminded of now that you bring it up, it also adds a layer of self responsibility, because it is a device that's probably going to be assigned to you as the worker. So, yeah, but yeah, overall, I think it's a very neat deal.
Oh yeah, and honestly, I can say, this is what I can honestly picture smart companies doing. They give you the device. They issue you the device. The device is going to have some sort of authentication on it. It's on itself. It's where you get into work, you take it, you plug, you sit down, you power it up. That is doing one level of authentication. Then you put your password in or your fingerprint in. That's another layer of authentication. Mm-hmm. And then, quite honestly, you leave for the day, you unplug it, you take it home with you. you are basically insured. No one is going to spoof your identity on the network. I honestly think it's a nicer way of doing some kind of security instead of card readers, badge readers,
yeah,
retina scan, all this kind of other stuff. RFID tags and stuff is garbage. This, I think, could be much better.
Especially the retina scan, because you've seen in all the, like, yeah, the Bond films, you know, you just, they kill the guy, pull his eyeball out, and or in the case of, like, the facial recognition for unlocking your Google phone, you just take a photo of yourself and hold it up in front of the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Or just, you know, a finger scan is cut off finger. Right. And I will say, here's one of the misnomers about all of that kind of stuff. Retinas change over time. They actually change kind of quick. You have to get re-scanned, I believe it's every 6 or 8 months, or else the scan does not work. And if it still works after a year, they're not doing a very secure way of scanning your retina. They're doing a very inaccurate way. Same thing with fingerprints. Fingerprints should be re-scanned every, like, year to 4 years, because they do slowly change throughout your life. Now, the software that we use in police stations, it all takes that into considerations, because they only do, I wanted to say, 11 points of detail. And these 11 points, they have figured out, will change the least out of all the rest of the fingerprint. But work fingerprint readers and laptop fingerprint readers are not that accurate. Mm-hmm. So you have to constantly rescan your image. That's why I will never use my fingerprint as a password on a device, because it just changes. And what if I wake up and my son has a sander on my finger? Don't laugh. I love my kids, but it could happen.
But here's the question: if it was going to be one of your two boys,
Danny, yeah, my youngest, okay,
all right. Let's make sure.
Oh, no doubt, he's the one who I'm going to have knock at my door in about 10 years. A grown man saying, "Are you Danny's father?" Yes. Tell your son to stay away from my daughter. You know, he's the one. Right. And to which I'll tell the guy right to his face, "Oh, that's horrible. Don't, no, really? Oh, my, that's horrible. I'm so ashamed. Oh, I'll take care of it." And then I close the door. Good job, Danny. Okay, now, we went from something that I think is honestly has a great chance to have potential to be really good, that Devin Scepter.
Mm-hmm.
Scepter. Yep. To something that I honestly believe is going to be a horrible, malicious flop. It's the Dell Project Ophelia. This is a Dell USB size computer. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And it's using Wyze Pocket Cloud. Wyze Pocket Cloud. Have you ever heard of Wyze Pocket Cloud before?
And you mentioned it earlier in the show.
Well, I mean, before that, man.
To be honest, no.
No. Nobody has. You know why? Because it sucks. Okay. I know that from experience. It's a horrible remote desktop application. It tries to be like TeamViewer, but supposedly can do deeper things and more powerful things. I found it to be a horrible user experience, and to buy it on Android is like it was too much money. I know that. Log Me In was $20. In comparison, that was a deal compared to Wyze in functionality. You know what I mean?
Mm.
You got way more bang for your buck with that $20 than you did Pocket Cloud. It was just bad. But I believe this is also going to be $100. I don't see business. I see businesses thinking about picking this up because it has a name they recognize, like Wyze. Wyze is kind of well known, but I see this being a horrible flop in under a year and then discontinuing it. But I see hackers picking them off of eBay for $40 and doing some really crafty things with them. I'll say that. And that's the best way I can spin this one.
But, I mean, see, here's what I'm seeing here. And to be fair, when you talk about like the MK802 or even the Devin Scepter, you're not getting a lot of, you know, hardware specifications. I mean, good specs. very specific ones, as opposed to, you know, just saying, oh, it has this port and it runs, the CPU runs this many gigahertz or whatever. But this one doesn't even provide you with any of that. It's just, why should I buy it? Well, it says Dell on it. Well, here's my $100.
Yeah.
That's what I see out of this. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't know how well it's going to do.
Well, and it's unclear if this is running some sort of, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, embedded Windows, B, some kind of custom Linux, or C, some level of Android as its based operating system. I don't know, and nor do they make it clear, at least to me, what it is. Maybe it's one of those things, and don't be shocked. If I would have read more than 10 words, it might have said it in there. Nothing stuck out to me saying what the base operating system was going to be, which scares the heck out of me. I will say that.
Yeah.
But I at least like seeing major corporations and people making, trying to make enterprise type mini computers similar to the one I used at my OLF talk as my main rig. So I just like seeing that.
It's going to take more exposure, either in, you know, successful or unsuccessful ways, to either have the devices evolve into something even better. Because, I mean, when you think of Android tablets, or even take it a few years back, the netbooks. You know, if you go to the big electronics shows, there's 150 of them announced. 7 of them make it to market. Right? So, you know, just as well as I do, we've seen a lot of these little, you know, USB PCs come up, or little USB-based media centers come up. But if they're making a way to stores, or at least being sold, then I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt at the very minimum, and I wish them luck.
Yeah. Well, what I really want to come out of this, typically the first couple people doing stuff are not successful at it. But they lay the precedent, and they might get enough of them made, manufactured, that could drive costs down just enough for someone else to think that they could do it better. You know what I mean? This might be the first iteration, and it might not be till the third iteration till these things actually hit the right spot with the right hardware and the right price and the right operating system and the right application and the right functionality. You know what I mean? But these are still cool. Needless to say, I want one of them.
Okay.
Not the first one, because I'm not an enterprise guy. I don't want remote desktop terminal stuff. I want hackability. So whichever one's more hackable, I'll say.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'll say in the link I have, it did say USB Android for Project Ophelia. But that was, I'll just say, that was in an Engadget article. I looked at the official Dell blog. I saw 4 mentions of this in the Dell blog. Not once did they say Android. So, I don't know. I'm just a little scared, that's all. Okay, now this last thing, I'm sorry, Cody. I had to mention this because, you know, when you're a little bit ADHD and you're a little bit OCD at the same time, you're weird. And I will say, you might like something that some people don't like. But I like this a heck of a lot. Have you ever thought to yourself, you know, I would like to hear Superstition by Stevie Wonder. I really want that song. I really want to jam that song. I want to do something to that song, whether it be work out, ride a bike, punch code or whatever. But I don't want the song to end. Yeah, I can loop it, but then I got to listen to the ending and the beginning. I just don't want it to end. There's a website out there. Soon, I guarantee you, is going to be an Android and iOS application called the Infinite Jukebox. You can either upload your own MP3, or you can go through the list of, I think it's like the most popular songs or something. Oh, these are recent songs in their default thing, where you can look at the recent songs other people uploaded, and you can just click on it. And what you will see is basically a circle with a whole bunch of like slivers in the circle, and then a whole bunch of lines, curvy lines, linking other parts of the circle to other parts of the circle. What happens is the very top is the very beginning of the song. you hit play, and like a clock, it slowly goes around clockwise. And then at those lines, it will randomly select which of these lines to follow. And what it will basically do, play a song forever, and it will basically randomly jump from point to point in the song, but there is actually intelligent algorithms done to where the beat patterns match up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So needless to say, last night before Android App Addicts, I sat here for an hour listening to Under Pressure from Queen. And the more it was going, the more I was sitting there, you know, getting links, getting this ready, getting that ready. And then when Steve hit me up on Google Plus, I literally didn't want to pick up and do the show. I was too busy. You know, I liked it.
Well, now that you finally explained it, and yes, I have a bit of ADD myself. And I will say that whenever I want to concentrate, I have to do it in either complete silence. I mean, complete silence. Mm-hmm. Like I can't read a book when my wife's talking to me, or the radio's on, or the TV, or the kid, you know, I can't.
Right.
Because I'm trying to enjoy an experience, but also digest, you know, a written word and media or something, you know. I have to have my attention on it. That being said, when I would write fiction, and when I still write fiction, I usually put on a pair of headphones, especially these ones, because they're very nice and they're very comfy. But I'll literally just have the same song on shuffle, on repeat. Because it puts me in a space. Usually the songs can help me, you know, all the rights to certain songs, or if I have a song that I maybe think of a story idea, I'll write or whatever. But I always have an argument. It's just the one song. Because then you get lost in it, and it doesn't matter what you're hearing to a certain extent. It creates a mood.
Yes,
exactly. And a wavelength that you'll be able to tune into to get done whatever you need to do.
Right. And I'll say, technically speaking, this software is doing nothing magical. What it's doing, anybody with any ear could do this on his own.
Right.
You simply take the song and you find breakpoints, and then you just copy-paste, and you can make the song infinite yourself. The beauty is you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You just hit upload, it uploads it, it analyzes it, and then it says press play. Yeah, and I'll say, if you browse the recent most played and most uploaded, you will see a wide range of songs. I'll just say that, mm-hmm. A very wide range of songs.
Yeah. A lot of them, you know, if you think of, I don't know, the last 2-3 years, you know, a lot of, there's a few rock things in here, a lot of pop, mm-hmm. A lot of really popular rock.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say if you go to the most uploaded tab, you will see also songs from Queen, Coldplay, I saw a bunch of AC/DC, Africa by Toto. I mean, you know, everything. But yes, I will say there's more than a couple groups. I have no idea who they are. So I'm guessing they're newer ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Thunderstruck, AC/DC. Yep. So as soon as this show's ending, I'm just sitting here going like this, shoulder dancing in my chair, listening to something.
Yeah, I got some I'm going to upload later too, for sure.
Yeah, I honestly can't wait for this to be an Android app. I'll just say that. I can't wait.
Oh, that'll be nuts.
Because I'm almost going to enjoy running out of podcast, dare I say.
Right.
I know that was really, you know, blasphemy. I'm sorry.
You won't do that. It'll never happen. Dog catcher for life.
I'm still like 50 behind.
Are you using Presto?
Of course.
I'm just saying some people fall off that wagon. And then, more importantly, some people don't listen to me when I give them solutions for their life, and they end up with the same problem. So that's their fault.
Yeah, I'll say I can't live without Presto because it sounds like people are on drugs. When I don't have Presto.
I know.
They talk so slow about things. Oh, my God.
That's what was wrong with Pocket Casts when I tried it for the first time. I'm like, what is the deal? There's something off here. But that we're getting into AAA territory. Okay. Infinite Jukebox. Got to check it out for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. That was the last of our topics. We're going to roll into some emails and some Google Plus comments, which I had up. I'm going to re-bring up here. And by the way, thank you to everyone who's been adding me on Google Plus lately. I don't do like a blanket response. I try to go through and individually thank everybody, so it takes me a bit more time. So if you have added me recently and haven't heard back, trust me, my response is on the way. Okay, let's see here. Nathan sent us a message. He said, "Hey, Stephen Cody. I guess that subject line didn't get me spam filtered." His subject line was, I don't even know. That's okay. Anyway, he says, here's the problem. A program I want to run and run a lot is built on Java. In fact, it holds the place of my current all-consuming gaming addiction. Likely you or your listeners can figure out what it is. Here's the issue. Depending on what version of the game I run, OpenJDK Java 6 or OpenJDK Java 7 will run it fine. I can do single player, I can connect to other servers. I can open my single player game to other players and host from within the same instance. From there on, it gets a bit hairy. When my roommate connects to me, one of us at a time, usually him, will get a bad server lag. I make a change, see it not happen, then the game catches up a few seconds later. Close to being unplayable. Worse, if I run into issues that require me to log out and back in, the whole server needs to restart along with me. If I open a separate server-only application on my machine and we both connect our clients to it, I can play fine. Obviously, I can also disconnect my client and reconnect with no problem. But he gets even worse lag. Full-on unplayable for him. As a side note, I also get an interesting glitch when I host or play single player. My movement keys can get stuck while keying and clicking at the same time. Also, the shift key will either get stuck on or will stop registering as on while I'm holding it down. Those two bits will be important in a minute. My machine is an AMD dual core 3. Something or other gigahertz, I forget this, with 6 gigs of RAM running Ubuntu 12.04. My roommate's machine is an Intel Core Duo 2.2 GHz with 3 gigs of RAM running Vista Home Premium. When he hosts the game, starting in single-player mode, we both get good performance with negligible lag. We'll test what happens when this machine runs a server app and a client. More on that, my issues with sticky keys disappear. What the heck? While I know most Linux users find Java to be evil, is Windows just better at running it and the applications built on it, or am I missing something here? Love the show, as always. Keep on keeping on. Cheers, Nathan.
Hey, Nathan. Here's the easiest Occam's razor kind of thing I can say. One of the very first things you said was you're running OpenJDK. When you're in Windows, you're not running OpenJDK. You're running Oracle Java. I highly encourage you to completely remove OpenJDK and install actual Java. If you want to run this, and I can virtually guarantee a month of bacon.
Whoa, door.
Yeah, be careful. I can virtually guarantee. I know. Months of, installing genuine Java will take care of it.
A month of whose bacon?
His.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Not mine, because that's too much.
I wanted to clarify there, because I do think like a lawyer sometimes.
Yes. Well, because here's the thing. OpenJDK is not supposed to be a drop-in, let me rephrase that, it's not actually a drop-in replacement for Java. It emulates the Java stack in the best possible way it can, which means some stuff will work, some stuff will work perfect, and some things won't work right. I experienced this with Open Wonderland. The software Jonathan Adu told Steve Chirino to check out to do live concerts on the net like Second Life. With OpenJDK, that thing would not run right for me whatsoever. Completely removed OpenJDK, installed Java, it ran fine.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's the easiest Occam's razor thing. Now, it might actually be something else. It might be something video performance-wise, but I'm willing to bet Java that OpenJDK is the actual issue.
I'm going to go on a limb here and say that your machine is underperforming due to the fact that it's within such a physical proximity as a machine running Vista. That could be a problem, too. Although
absolutely, maybe he needs Nightwise to lick that box. And that'll take care of it.
Yeah, Nightwise.com Vista Challenge. Check it out. Speaking from experience, and I'm sure you know anybody who's done PC gaming knows, if you are ever playing in a LAN game, local area network, you know, like eight guys playing, you know, team deathmatch on, you know, Quake 4 or whatever, someone, unless it's been disabled somehow through software, will accidentally hit the Windows key if they're running the instance, and then the entire LAN will just freeze up. Ooh. So it sounds like it used to do that back in the day. I remember running, you know, Duke Nukem matches, Diablo 2 matches, just, you know, it was terrible. If you don't have your LAN set up to bypass that. Anyway, that sounds like one of the things he was experiencing, where if he was stopping the game as running the server himself for whatever reason, it would completely disable the other player as well. So, yeah, try Dor's advice, Nathan. Get back to us, see if that fixed it, because even though Steam's on Linux now and your Wine integration is much better, we're still going to see some of these hurdles that we need to overcome. And if it's something easy that a few of us find, we should be sharing it so that the many can prosper because of the news.
Right. And I almost forgot to, I did. I would encourage him to also milesofgaming.com or linuxbasement.com. Get in touch with Chad, because his son is a Minecraft fanatic, and something tells me if he was seeing less than stellar Minecraft experience, his son would probably, like, you know, draw on his eyelids when he's sleeping, kind of thing.
Right.
You know, because you don't mess with the kids' Minecraft.
And has that show actually posted yet? I mean,
Miles of Game?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's up to, like, episode 5, I want to say.
Okay, because I was searching for it on Dogcatcher the other day, and I couldn't find it. I don't listen to podcasts while I'm home on my PC or my laptop. I always listen to them on Android, so I'll have to get the feed URL and then input that into Dogcatcher and get it that way. Because, yeah, if you guys know Chad Wallenberg from Linux Basement, you have an idea of his sense of humor, but not only that, his knowledge and his passion for all things tech. And he has a podcast with his son on gaming, which I think is great. You know, my boy, you know, is coming up, and I think one day, and even Dor is talking about, you know, bringing his son to OLF next year, and that's okay. I'm gonna need someone to hold the ice bucket while I'm at the machine, so he perfect height for that. Somebody start a podcast with their son and to have them have a shared passion, I think that's awesome, and I can't wait to listen to the show.
Just good guys speaking very honestly about their gaming stuff. And I will say, while the son always brings up basically computer games, Chad always brings up iPad games.
What do you expect from a freedom hater extraordinaire?
I know. But I am happy to say I do believe we have pushed some listeners to his show. I've seen a little bit of activity in his Google Plus community that might indicate that. I really hope so, because Chad is a really, really, first off, smart guy that underplays his brains on the cast. He kids around a lot. It's good to listen to because, A, he's smart, and Claudio just seems like a really cool guy. He's a guy I want to sit down and have a beer with.
Yeah, Claudio seems like a good guy when he actually makes it on the show.
Right.
Calling him out there a little bit. Just for the sake of starting something. Chad's good, but no matter what you do, don't let him see your gobstopper. And that's not a euphemism.
Exactly, you never know.
You never know if he's planted in there by Wonka, if he's trying to make a competitive product. You have no idea what Slugworth is up to. At arm's length is where Wallenberg should be. Let's just say that. And may Linux Basement go on forever. Hopefully, I mean, dude, I wish they would kick it into gear and go weekly.
You can complain.
I'm not going to complain. It's just a wish. I'm going to make it my birthday wish this year. It's coming up soon.
Good man.
By the way, in case you guys forgot a couple weeks ago when Martin was on, Dor's birthday is May 24th.
Thanks, Cody.
You're welcome. Okay. Moving right along. Where could they send belated birthday gifts to, Dor?
smdcomputer.net.
Okay,
no.
All right.
They don't need to send me nothing. They don't need to send me nothing. Trust me, not trying to sound dumb. I'm in no shape, where for rich, but I am rich with family and friends and stuff to do. I'm not in need. If I was, I would just sell crack on a street corner.
There you go. Well, you'd have a lot of competition in Baltimore.
Thank you. Exactly.
I've seen The Wire. I know what happens.
Right. Okay. But I'm just kidding. I really don't need anything. I've had a couple people send me things here. To be honest, this was sent from a guy. I have my original one upstairs in my kid's room.
Is MK802 for the audio listeners.
Exactly. Yep. Thank you.
All right. Moving right along. This I read, almost 2 weeks ago, and I thought it was awesome. Byer Brown, our good friend Byer Brown, touched base with us. And this is more of, actually, he wouldn't mind me talking about this on the show, would he? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I don't know. If it was me, I would think he wouldn't mind at all.
Okay. Well. Anyway. Okay. So Byer Brown. I finally got to meet him in person at OLF last year. First of all, heck of a guy. If you guys know him, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, you should check out, Southern Beer Review and Two Mugs in a Movie. I almost said Mug in a Movie. Yeah. Couple of casts he's currently involved in. Heck of a voice, heck of a guy, good personality. But he is in the works. He's going to start a Linux user group. And he's calling it Linuxburg, which is great. It sounds like a great place to live. Awesome. He's from Pittsburgh. He's trying to get a location nearby. So for those of you in the Pittsburgh area, if you're looking for a lug, research Byer Brown on Google+ and let him know you'd be interested. Because when I know from personal experience, when investigating lugs myself, a lot of it is not only attendance but regular attendance. And if the need and the desire is there by at least a handful of people, that just gives a person that wants to get one of these things going that much more incentive to make it happen faster and on a consistent basis. So if you are in that area and you're looking for that, touch base with him. We'll have a link to his contact information in the show notes.
Yeah,
and only good things can come from that. Let me tell you, he has some other ideas as far as bringing an open source and Linux community together in his area, and that this is the first step of that. So your support at this sort of quote-unquote ground level is only going to help him accomplish even greater things. So touch base with him.
Well, yeah, and I have to say, if you're anywhere local to him, this is your chance to be A, influential into things that are happening, B, become a core member in something that could turn out to be huge, and to be honest, C, really hang with a guy who I consider to be one of the coolest guys I know. I basically made a commitment to him. I literally sent him my birth date, my son's birth date, my wife's birth date, and my wedding anniversary dates. I said, as long as your conference is more than 3 days away from any one of these days, I will do everything in my power to show up to that fest. So far, he's steering clear of those dates. So far, I will literally run over a squirrel. I don't know. Well, I'll do whatever I have to do to get there.
Sounds good. Yeah, no, heck of a guy. I can see him. And also, I will say, especially in his now defunct Linux Mint podcast, he brought a certain sense of humor and some sketches to his shows, and it was very, very welcome, especially because you consider, you know, we're talking about, you know, technical instruction and, you know, just kind of geeking out, but he brought that element to it. So to see his creativity shine in that was great, but to see what he might be capable of on a bigger platform, I'm really looking forward to it. So Byer Brown, good luck. I appreciate it.
Very cool.
Okay. Let's see here. All right. Oh yeah, Stephen Wojcik. I hope that's right. Stephen has touched base with me quite a bit. He recently purchased a Chromebook, an Acer C710, which he'll get to here in the email. So he says, "Hey Stephen, Cody. First, I want to say that I love the show. I appreciate all the knowledge that you selflessly give to the open source community, And not just those that already know and love Linux, but those who of us like me that are newbies to the idea of that knowledge is freedom, and that Linux is a valuable asset to anyone looking to make computers and information technology a career. After listening to your podcasts, I was intrigued from your recent discussions about Chromebooks, the Acer C710 in particular, so I picked it up about a week ago, and I must say I'm in love with it. As far as a daily driver, it doesn't disappoint. For $199, it's the perfect form factor, it's hackable, and I fully plan on maxing out the RAM and installing an SSD in the near future. Okay. That said, there's one rather glaring problem with Chrome OS, at least for me. Silverlight is not supported. Currently, I work a 9-to-5 while going to school in the evenings. I'm studying computer science at an online university, so the majority of my classes require access to online labs and resources. The problem? All of my online labs require Silverlight to run. Is there any free or paid extension that you know of that can allow me to run these Silverlight-required resources? Otherwise, I find myself firing up the Mac to do my studying. Please help. Your humble bundle, the Lesser Steve.
I really didn't want to answer this because there is only one answer. And absolutely not. There never will be. You can get, just like OpenJDK, they have OpenJDK, then they have the real thing. You have Silverlight, and then you have the, imitation crab meat is the only way I can explain it, version of Silverlight. And I'm trying to remember what's it called.
I know. Anyway, I know what you're talking about.
Moonlight.
Yep. Mono. Yeah. There you go.
I don't know if that would ever run on Chrome if you install, Crouton. You can probably get Mono there with very little problem. But I will never see default Silverlight working, period. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say.
Well, that's too bad. But...
yeah, I mean, it comes from a proprietary closed-source company that will not support open stuff and direct competitors like Google. So I don't know what else to say.
Yep. Okay. Well, my dogs are getting a little anxious, but that's okay. Okay, I got one last thing here. Teddy Madison contacted me on Google+. And she says, "Hi, Cody Cooper. Almost a 3-month delay in responding to you. This is one of the people that I responded to personally, and she's just now getting back to me." That's fine, Teddy. Take your time. Yes, I am a big fan of the show. Not much a fan of Google+, though. It's just a matter of too many social media subscriptions and not enough motivation and or time to devote to getting a handle on how this works. I do think you are funny, and I love your voicemails. She's probably talking about my voicemails to AAA, which, yes, are funny. Thank you. I'm a bit behind on listening to the shows, though, and need to catch up, which I do when I'm sewing. In fact, tonight would be a good night to do that. The husband left for a harmonica jam. Our two English setters are all snuggly wuggly on the bed, and there's two IPAs in the fridge with my name on them. Smiley face. I'm going to pause this right here. First of all, you just scored so many points. You don't even know. Husband, harmonica jam. So I'm thinking he's like a straight-laced dude potentially, and he's like, "You know what, honey, I'm going to go jam with a harmonica. Is that fine?" And she's like, "Yeah, no problem. I'm going to sew, listen to tech podcasts with the dogs, and I'm going to drink a couple beers." And he's like, "No problem," and he leaves. That's the perfect situation.
Yeah, I mean, this is like material for a movie.
Right.
That's like great. I mean,
sounds like a piece of fiction, but it's got to be true. If she's
dead. Yeah, that's just beyond cool.
Yeah. And so she goes on, "I should be paying attention to see if the Unbootables will be on tonight, but I have to devote myself entirely to that and not so. I mean, one must be a conscientious and present participant, fingers on the keyboard, typing in droll comments, probably watching it live and contributing live," which I do agree. There is definitely a place for that show, and it is contributing as it happens. As I say, I must have a lot of fun. I also do have a lot of fun doing that with all of the other shows from that network as well. So, to go on, sorry. "Thank you for the offer to help. I need to gather my thoughts first on how to ask my question. It's about organizing files in the cloud and whether SharePoint is what we need. I've also been wondering to whom among all my favorite podcasters I should address this. Of course, Mike Smith comes to mind, but SharePoint doesn't come up much, nor is it very popular with my faves. Anyway, I do need to put together a coherent question on this topic and then throw it out. Have a great weekend, Cody, and I'll hear from you soon, Teddy, or T-Winks in the chat.
You don't need to research the question anymore. Don't use SharePoint. SharePoint is horrible. SharePoint has had exploits in it that allow for user escalation. The same exploit has existed for 3.5 years. Microsoft has not patched it, will not patch it. It is a very closed system with very little community support and probably even less Microsoft support. I've had to work on SharePoint servers in the past. I would literally eat turkey bacon, much rather eat turkey bacon than work on a SharePoint server. The question I have for Teddy, what's your basic need? What's your basic functionality you're trying to accomplish? Because SharePoint, to be honest, can do a bunch of different things. It has very good Outlook calendar synchronization, meeting synchronization kind of things. It can do a lot with Office documents. There's a lot of other stuff it can do that it can only do not well, I'll say. Very lacking compared to many other systems. If you're stuck on a Windows world, I would heavily encourage you to look at .NET Nuke over SharePoint for sheer functionality. SharePoint is it's going to be killed soon. There's no doubt in my mind. Everything Microsoft makes is killed sooner or later. Like Silverlight. Silverlight is now officially dead. So for that college to only offer stuff in Silverlight, pointless. It's dead. Microsoft has already announced it is dead. They're not going to update it anymore. It's gone. I wouldn't expect SharePoint to be around much longer, to be honest. And by much longer, 3 years maybe, before it's just gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my personal higher education experience, what I ran into, because you got to figure these institutions have invested a lot of money, and not only a lot of money, but a lot of time into these tools, whether they be actual physical machines or software. Not only investing to purchase these items, but the training involved for the instructors or professors, and creating curriculum, you know, over so many terms, semesters, years, etc., to really sort of nail it down to the point where if they do get locked in to a certain degree, and proprietary, non-proprietary, it doesn't matter. But if they're narrow-minded enough to just stick with it for the sake of kind of like the saying, well, it's what we've always used, you know, then yeah, they're not only doing themselves harm, but they're sending their customers and or students out into the world with I don't know, almost like a skewed version of what it's actually going to be utilized in that area of expertise. For instance, you know, by the time he gets out of school, chances are Silverlight's going to be completely dead.
Well, yeah, and I'll say, well, they're probably just using Silverlight as the like transport protocol to the end result,
right?
Of the actual
right.
course,
but
and I'll say. SharePoint, I'm in a state agency. I work for a state agency where I'm tightly tied with six other agencies. Two of them use SharePoint as their intranet server. We can view each other's intranet very easily.
Mm-hmm.
The two that use that have constant issues. The best use case for SharePoint is, and this might come off as rude, pompous, arrogant, whatever, the best use case for SharePoint is for a lazy administrator who needs very quick integration with especially Outlook and events and calendaring and meetings and scheduling. It is a great, quick drop-in tool for that. It's someone who does not want to really administrate something. It's for somebody who really doesn't want to have control over something. It's for somebody who wants to be reliant and beholden on a company that makes good documentation. They probably have great training material for SharePoint, but it's I could never use that tool anywhere. I would literally be insubordinate at my 9-to-5 before I used that tool.
And I
made that clear to a boss, because they said, well, there's other agencies using SharePoint. How about us? And I said, you will have to write me up. He said, why? I said, because I will not use it. I will not devote any of my brain cycles to learning something that horrible and something that's used at such a small places. I mean, you know, it's not even close to being popular. You know, it's, I'm trying to think, small business server, perfect example, a very useful, functional tool that they used for a while. They put out, they upgraded, they integrated, they had good tools in it, good wizards in it, and they killed it because they wanted people to buy the more expensive version of the server. Now in IIS, by default, you can enable PHP. You can download a IIS component that will automatically install and get a base configuration for MySQL, WordPress, Drupal, PHP, Joomla, and all these other things, because their de facto tool can't cut the mustard. And not that I picture anyone actually being able to cut mustard, by the way.
I do. You'd have to freeze it first.
Ah, touche.
See, there you go. That's why I'm here. Okay. Yeah, so, Teddy, I hope that answers your question, even though you didn't really pose it, but you somewhat alluded to what you might ask, and that's this dude's job, Door. He knows what you're thinking, and I know exactly what he's thinking right now. Save me one of those IPAs and pet those dogs for me. They need some attention. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Teddy, for reaching back into the abyss, giving me that little high five, and letting me know that you are there, even though you're not on Google Plus that much. I hope you hear this in the show. I hope you're knitting something awesome right now.
Like a penguin.
Like a penguin.
Or Podnet's logo.
Dude, oh, yeah. All I'm saying, if I had to request something, it would be...
I don't know.
It would be that I'm like, the O-Bolt. The O-Bolt in Podnuts.
I know that, but I'm also thinking Link or Zelda. Or Triforce.
Well, you know what I would want? I've seen this on Etsy. A knit Mega Man helmet for my son.
That's cool.
Just turns two. He's turning two on July 30th. Yeah. Or wait. Is that? No, July 29th. July 30th is my anniversary. I always get this mixed up, and I just let it down on the internet. That's fine. It's there forever. The NSA just heard that. You're welcome. It's fine.
Exactly.
Tell my wife. She's on Sprint, by the way. You're not going to hear that on the Verizon call. So, okay. You're not going to believe this story, but that actually, for the most part, catches us up, but I do want to read something. Our good friend, Kevin Berry, KB Nexus, reached out to me today. And you listened to the episode that Martin and I did?
Absolutely,
okay,
sir.
Okay. So this is what Kevin wrote me today. He said, hey, Pi Bro, sounds like another podcast in the works. Time to rally all the Obando commandos for OLF. Two words for you, bumper sticker.
Yeah, I know. Dude, we have to have some kind of bumper sticker for him at OLF. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
We will. Eric, we can contact Eric Ardini. He has some kind of sticker hookup.
We got to get the manager there.
Yeah, because he's a politician. You know he had bumper stickers for his campaign.
He bought a whole new bucket of grease to hit those palms to get what he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but all Martin has to do is, give someone a piano lesson in exchange, because he lives in Portland, you know, for like a truckload of bumper stickers, because it's all, you know, free trade and all that up there.
Yeah. I kind of wish I didn't live in Baltimore.
You're right. Well, you can fly out here anytime you want, Dor. You can fly out here anytime you want. That's all I'm going to say. End of discussion.
I don't know what I would trade, though.
It's a fact. Dude, do you still have that NA-10?
No.
No, you got rid of it? Oh, damn.
Yeah, I gave it away. I could exchange hacky sack lessons.
There we go. See?
There you go.
We get a little co-op exchange thing going down at the lobby at the Drury, September 12th through 16th, Columbus, Ohio. Bring your garbage. There will be a showdown.
Awesome.
Okay. But anyway, thank you, Kevin. Now, Kevin sent that message to me, and I got to tell you, I'm just going to leave it at that. With that comment, it got some gears going in my head, mm-hmm. and I'm going to leave it at that for now. So thank you, Kevin, for hitting me up. And yeah, dude, regardless of what happens, there will be some bumper stickers there, a variety of them. There's so many good quotes from that episode. And we're going to we'll definitely have some memorabilia, especially for the hardcore guys like you, Kevin, because you travel so far from what, down the street?
Exactly. 10 minutes away.
Yeah, I was like, where are you staying? He's like, home. I live that way.
Yeah.
So thank you, Kevin. And I'll see you in September. All right. Yeah, Dor, that's about it for this week. I like this change to Fridays, even though this is Doppelganger week. I'm the one who was yawning a little bit just because I'm exhausted. You know what my schedule is like the past few days. But I like the change. Hopefully we get a lot more people coming to the live chat, because I do like seeing people in the live chat. Thank you guys for being here tonight. I do appreciate it. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'll say, I like Friday for a couple reasons. I don't know if it's really the best for consistency. I don't know. Time will tell, because I'm married. I don't know anything. If you listeners have literally a preferred night you would like to watch us live, if you hypothetically, if we get, 300 people that say, I would like to come out live on night, we can take a look at moving it. Nothing mm-hmm. is written in stone. Mm-hmm. And I will say, this was our first Friday cast. I literally expected nobody live. So to have more than one live viewer is good, and we have had more than one live viewer.
Yeah, man, we had a good amount, and a lot of the regular guys that were there was on Tuesdays came in. Martin was here, Highlander, mm-hmm. several of the guys. So thank you, for coming. Regardless, it's not going to change your listening experience, because we'll still release it on a fairly consistent manner. So, yeah.
Perfect. Verbiage there, sir.
I know. I was tiptoeing around the tulips right there, I'll tell you that. make sure not to hit the landmines, the big words that might allude to our actual release schedule. Okay. One of the things I wanted to mention, and I'm going to try to mention this on every show because I do think it's important, and it was something I talked about a couple episodes ago. At the end of every show, I would like you, if you are attending a Linux user group, in your local area, or one that you happen to drive to once in a while that you feel is beneficial, please send us an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com with your contact information. Well, obviously, we're going to have your email address because you're sending it to us, but just a brief description of what it is and where it is, so that we can potentially have a posting in the forums or create some sort of a database for our listeners, because it's one thing for me to say, like I did in the past episode, you should really go to a lug. That would be great. And yes, you can investigate it online, but some of those are, just like old pages. Some of them are dead links. Some of them are lugs that are no longer running. Some of them are lugs that were very popular, but now this person moved, so it's not as good as it was before. Hearing something live and recent, and not only that, but your perspective on it. And you got to know that if we hear four or five people ranting and raving about this one, and if it's nearby, then people will flock to it. It's going to make it that much better of an experience. So do yourself the favor, help advertise for those lugs, send us that email, and we will make sure to get it in some sort of a digestible form for everyone to read, and we'll continue that as a larger document to be referenced in the future.
Yes. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, don't forget, Buyer Brown, hook up with him. He wants to do lugs and fest and events and celebrations and everything.
High five competitions.
I'm sure.
Pancake eating.
Yep, and plenty of craft beer.
Oh, dude. See, you can say that because you're drinking tonight. I can't drink because I got to drive. It's okay. So this is Doppelganger week.
Well, if you say it loud enough, maybe the NSA will send you a Google car.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Mountain View is not that far away from me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, Dor. And that's about it for the week. Where can we find you online?
Oh, podnuts.com, period. Don't forget the lounge. Don't forget mumble.podnuts.com. I expect for the next couple weeks, anytime someone goes in there, it's going to be empty or one other person at the most. I really hope within 2 months there's actually semi consistent, a couple people, at least two or three people. I will try to be in there when possible. I honestly can't be in there when I'm at work, and I can't be in there when I'm podcasting.
Right, right.
Obviously, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. But if that takes off, then it could be a platform for a lot of other content coming down the pipe. So if it's something you want to support and you want to see grow, then help us, you know, put your good foot forward, and we'll make it happen.
Oh, yeah. And super quick, openspeak.cc is a basic project started by the guys at Linux Basics, which I'm still affiliated with,
mm-hmm.
where the idea is it is an open platform to people to talk about whatever they want to talk about. There is more than a couple podcasts that are recorded directly from there using Mumble and the record feature built into Mumble. If you want to have a joint podcast with a couple people, and it can be on knitting, it can be on guns, it can be on taxonomy, it can be on taxidermy, it doesn't matter. You can host it at openspeak.cc. All you got to do is contact one of the admins, I am one of them, and ask for a room to be created, and we'll create one for you. As long as you use it, we'll keep it there.
It can be on bumper stickers, it can be on knitting.
Yep.
On harmonica jams. It can be on
IPA beers.
Harmonica jams.
Exactly.
Anything. Thanks again, mm-hmm. Teddy. Well, thank you, Dor. I am, of course, still Cody Cooper. Contact me on Google+, and just search me Cody Cooper. Or you can send me an email to cody@podness.com. Keep sending those emails. We really, really love the correspondence, and it brings more content to the show. So not only are you helping us, but you're helping other listeners, and you, yourself, the contributor of that content, are getting something out of it as well. So thank you very much. As always, if you're going to be doing any shopping on Amazon, please go to podnuts.com/Amazon. You will be helping out the network with any purchases you are going to make anyway, because we'll get a small commission on every sale there. You can also check out our /eBay link, sort of the same deal, and /Newegg. But primarily, we get a better deal from Amazon, and that's where I tend to do a lot of my online shopping nowadays. So try that one if you haven't already. We would appreciate it. Thank you. Also, if you are interested in seeding a torrent for Sonar, that is the custom Linux distribution that Jonathan Nado has created in order to help with accessibility issues, please send an email to podcast@linuxtherestofus.com, and we'll put you in touch with him, because he needs some help seeding that torrent online in order to help distribute it not only in a larger, widespread fashion, but at a faster rate. So that would be much appreciated, and be a good way for the community to get together and help him. However, if you want to help him in another fashion, go to the acf.co. You can sign up to be a regular financial contributor on a month-to-month basis for as little as $2 a month, and that money goes straight to the foundation to help bring computing to those who may have otherwise been left behind, those people with disabilities.
Right. Just a super quick mention. I keep forgetting to email Sunday Morning Linux Review. It's not that I'm calling you out, guys. I keep forgetting emailing you, and I know at least two of you listen to this show. Sonar is not the distribution that will automatically start up Orca if you don't touch anything. Sonar starts up Orca, period, no matter what. The distribution you're thinking about is Triskel.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically a distribution anyone can use, but if a blind person inserts the disk, boots to it, and touches nothing, Orca will start up.
Right, right. And if you guys think my voicemails on Android App Addicts are funny, I have some planned for SMLR. Let's just say that. And as I've said in the past, I'm a big fan of Mary and Tony's work.
Exactly.
Oh, read between the lines. Read between the lines.
Wow.
I'm just kidding, Matt. I still have your $10. Anyway, thank you so much, everyone, for coming out this week. Send in those emails. Any voicemails, too, to 7076-PODNUT. We love hearing from you, but we love hearing you speak even more. And we can do that with the voicemail. We'll play it on the show. Please send those our way. And please do not forget that Linux is not just for the rest of us, but it is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.